United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our stars, Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne. The play, The Great Adventure by Arnold Bennett. Produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, direct from the stage of the Vanderbilt Theater in New York, the United States Steel Corporation brings you Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne in The Great Adventure. And here is Roger Pryor speaking for the Theater Guild.
Good evening, everyone. We're honored tonight by the presence of the most brilliant acting team in the theater. Starred in 21 Theater Guild plays, and apparently currently in the Broadway success, Oh Mistress Mine, Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne tonight are making one of their all too infrequent radio appearances. The play is Arnold Bennett's gay and tender comedy, The Great Adventure, which was a popular novel, a successful play in England and America, and a very well-received motion picture. Let's raise the curtain now on the radio version of The Great Adventure, starring Alfred Lunt as Priam and Lynn Fontanne as Alice, and featuring Romney Brent as Oxford.
Before we begin this story, there's something I must tell you about myself. My name is Priam Farrell. I'm sure you've heard the name. After all, my paintings hang in the foremost museums. They sell for thousands of pounds each, and I've been called the greatest painter since, Rembrandt. But why beat about the bush? Why not paint the facts? Why be modest? Perhaps you're surprised to hear me talking like this. After all, that you may have heard about my shyness, about the way I run away from people. The way I used to dart about Europe like a frightened ghost, hardly ever living more than a month in one place. But I'd like to tell you about that. I love people. I've had several very good friends. There was a farmer in southern Italy, a waiter in a restaurant in Switzerland, and, of course, my valet, Henry Leek. All people I could be at ease with as a human being. But with most people... I'll tell you how it was. I'd meet a girl, charming, delightful, refreshing. I'd be calling myself George, let's say, and the two of us would...
Oh, George, you are such fun. What I like about you is you have such abandon. No inhibitions.
What I mean is we'd have a fine time. And then she'd find out who I was.
Oh, Priam. Priam.
Yes.
To think that you... Oh, I wonder what you can see in just plain me.
Yes, I wonder. See, then the whole thing would be impossible. I'd feel like a monument being examined by tourists. And so I'd flee to the next town. Now, can you imagine this going on year after year? I kept sending my paintings to my agent in London. The checks came back larger and larger. But all that time, I was running from one European country to another. And finally, I did what I thought I'd never do. I fled back to my native England. I owned a house in London that had been closed for 20 years. Oh, I know it was reckless to return. And almost as soon as we'd unlocked the door, I could see the whispers passing down the street.
There's something doing at 126.
Look, at 126. It's him.
It's him.
It's him.
It's he.
But it was too late to draw back. And then it happened. Henry Leek, my valet that I spoke of, was just making my bed in the large master bedroom on the second floor when... Leek.
Oh.
Leek, good heavens, man, what's the matter?
Oh.
Well, you're burning up with fever.
Yes, sir.
You in pain?
In my chest. A chill I caught on the boat.
Well, you're shivering, Lee. Here, put on my dressing gown. Why, my word, you're almost keeling over. Here, here, get into my bed, quick.
Your bed,
sir? Of course, man. I can't afford to lose you. You're my protector.
Oh.
That's it. I've always thought of you as an old scoundrel, Leek, but I don't know what I'd do without you.
Oh.
Your head feels like a frying pan.
I'm done for, I'm afraid, sir.
Oh, nonsense. I'll call a doctor, and in no time at all, you'll be a... how do you call a doctor? I mean, that's the sort of thing you always do. How do you go about it?
You ring his doorbell,
ring
sir.
His doorbell. Oh, yes, that seems very sensible.
Two doors down.
Well, I ought to be able to do that. Well, I'd better try it once.
Sir.
Yes?
There's a young lady coming this evening.
A young lady? Why, Leek, you old devil. I know your propensities, but you certainly work fast.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll attend to her, Leek. I mean, you know that is. Well, you lie still. I'll call that doctor, sir. Well, Doctor?
I'm sorry.
What?
Dead.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. No, that's impossible.
I did all I could. Pneumonia.
Oh, no, but this can't be. What am I going to do without him?
What are you going to do without him?
Why, of course, don't you realize I'll be helpless, absolutely helpless. He and I, we were always together, and for 20 years...
Yes, I know how you feel, my good man, but you'll find a position...
What?
Ask rather, what will England do without him?
Now, look here.
What will the world do without him? It's a tragic loss.
I think there's some mistake. The man in that room...
Well, I know. Triumph Pal, the greatest artist since Titian.
Since Titian? You really think so?
It's the opinion of every leading critic, isn't it?
Well, yes, I suppose. Yes.
I tell you, I would give anything in the world if I could have been in time to save that man. If I could have talked to him just once face to face and tell him the reverence I felt for his work.
Reverence? Really?
No, I shall never have a chance to pay him that homage.
Well, let's hope not.
Huh? What was that?
No, nothing at all, Doctor, nothing.
Has Mr. Farrell any living relatives?
There's a cousin he hasn't seen for 30 years, Duncan Farrell. They always hated each other.
He lives in London?
Well, he used to.
Yes, he'll have to be informed. But I'll take care of everything. I know you're very upset. The registrar of deaths and the embalmer and the reporters. I know you won't want to be troubled with them, so I'll do.
Doctor?
Yes?
There's something I'd better explain.
Yes?
The man in that room there.
Yes?
That man, Doctor, is... Did you say reporters, relatives, registrar of deaths, embalmers, all those people?
Yes, of course.
And you'll take care of everything.
Yes, I'd be glad to. Now, what were you saying, my man?
Never mind, Doctor. Never mind. Thank you.
I am Duncan Farrell, a solicitor, cousin to your late employer. You're Lee Cavalett, I presume.
Well,
possibly my name is not very familiar to you.
Oh, I've heard of you. I know about a fight of 30 years ago in which your teeth were loosened and you were bit and kicked.
You're not very respectful. I'll ask you to remember that you're not my valet.
I'll remember it with ease.
That's enough, Leek. Where is the dead man?
Upstairs, front room.
I'll have a look at him. Nasty air.
The house has been closed for over 20 years.
I know. I'll have a look around. I'll call you if I need you, Lee.
Excuse me.
Oh, I didn't see you.
Well, the door was open. I thought perhaps you left it open on purpose.
No, I hadn't. Oh, you're the lady who...
Yes, that's right. This is me. Oh, you're you. Well, I'd have known you anywhere.
You'd have known me?
Well, your picture's silly. Look, I've got it with me. It's very nice here with the inscription.
Me and my master.
I could tell right away which was the master, him being so fine and elegant like. Not that you don't have a kind of an air yourself.
Dear lady, I'm a little confused.
Oh, yes, of course you are.
I'm afraid I ought to explain it.
I know. You're embarrassed. Don't worry. I won't rush things. You needn't be nervous with me.
Nervous? Well, yes, that...
Well, you know, there's many people that don't hold with matrimonial agencies.
Oh?
And what are you to do if you want to get married? You can sit around waiting till eggs are sixpence a dozen again and you'll be no nearer. What is there except a matrimonial agency?
Yes, what indeed?
Well, if you want to get married, it's no use pretending you don't.
No, indeed.
It? So when the agent sent your letter on to me, I was awfully pleased. I suppose you've got dozens.
Well, not exactly dozens.
Come along, of course you did. You said so in your letter. Here. I've read it so many times, I almost know it by heart. Dear madam, of all the dozens of letters I have received, yours with your description of your comfortable home in Putney moves me most profoundly. As one who has wandered with his master all over Europe for more years than I care to remember, I find myself unutterably lonely.
Lonely?
And long for just such a cozy nest as you describe.
Cozy nest?
Yours, Henry Leake. P.S. We arrive on the shores of England on Friday. Will you meet me that night at the above address?
I see.
Tell me, why did you typewrite it? It seems so sort of standoffish.
No, I don't know. Just part of my retiring nature.
Oh, I see.
Leake, you come up here, please.
My dear lady, this seems to be a rather inconvenient moment.
I understand you moving in and all, a man in your position.
Yes, exactly, and there's so many things to do.
You come, please.
Perhaps we could meet another evening at my house, then you could see my little place and see what you think of it. I believe in putting all my cards on the table. There's no funny business about me, there isn't.
No, I can see that.
I can see you're the kind of man that likes things that way, no pretense and no putting on.
No, I believe you're right.
Oh, maybe we'll hit it off. I've got a feeling we will, you know that?
Yeah?
Yes, well, my address is 29 John Street.
29 Putney. John Street, yeah.
Yes, and you come as soon as you can,
very
won't
well.
You? You will, won't you?
Yeah.
I don't mind telling you I'm looking forward to it.
Leake!
Goodbye.
Leake, why didn't you come when I called you?
You reminded me firmly that I was not your valet, and I remembered it.
You will please show respect for your betters. Is this satchel where my cousin kept his papers?
Yes.
So where's the key? Do you have it?
Yes, I sometimes look after the keys.
Well, let me have the key, please.
Yeah.
By the way, why wasn't I summoned sooner? I suppose he forbade you to call me.
Yes.
When did this illness begin?
Well, when we arrived, he was just making up the bed.
Did he always make up his own bed?
Oh, yes, always.
Ridiculous eccentricity.
Did you recognize your late lamented cousin?
Of course, people change a great deal in 30 years. But I would have known him anywhere.
You have a remarkable memory.
This seems to be a copy of his will.
He left nothing to you.
I expected nothing and need nothing. You will keep a civil tongue in your head.
He left most of his money for a National Museum of Modern Art.
National Museum? Then burial in Westminster Abbey will be a foregone conclusion.
Now, wait a minute.
A foregone in Westminster Abbey.
Now, this is ridiculous. Now, look, I've got to make clear
Leake,
that...
from now on, Brian Powell concerns you no longer. What wages did he pay you?
£400 a year.
A good deal too much for you.
Oh, you think so, do you?
I shall pay you tomorrow morning a month's salary in lieu of notice. You will be out of this house by 9 a.m.
But this is preposterous.
Your services are no longer required.
Well,
I see by this will that you will receive an income for life of £200 a year. You're very lucky. Will you please have your bags ready first thing in the morning? I shall want to inspect them before you go.
Next morning early, I found myself walking along the street with a suitcase in my hand, the worldly possessions of Henry Leake. The city seemed to be going mad. Newsboys were shouting about Westminster Abbey, and everywhere doors and windows were being draped in black. I felt as if I was a ghost hunting my own last rites. What was I to do? I walked to Westminster Abbey, barely thinking I could see the dean and tell him the whole truth, but I was quickly...
Get along there. Now, move along. No loitering there.
Now, look here. Now, you're making a mistake.
I said move along.
Time file is
move
not
along,
dead.
I said.
Now, listen. You're burying a living
get
man.
Out.
You're
get
burying
out. No
me.
Loitering here.
You're
keep
burying
moving.
Me.
Moving. Get along. Get along.
I was pushed roughly away. I tried again at another entrance, but they called me a dangerous radical. And they hustled me on, and then I wandered into a small hotel. After all, I had to stay somewhere. But I was in a panic. Always Henry Leake had attended to such things. Well, I walked to the desk, and...
Shall I show you a room?
Yes, perhaps.
We have a lovely one, and such nice people stay here. Our speciality is quiet bridge evening. Do you play bridge?
Oh, no, not that.
Sir?
Oh, not that.
Where are you not going?
I fled into the street, and then I left my bag at a railway station and I wanted some more. Aimlessly, confused, helpless. What was I to do? I kept feeling vaguely annoyed at Henry Leake for leaving me so insecure while he prepared to take his repose in Westminster Abbey. Yet all the time I wandered on, a voice kept shining through my confusion.
29 John Street.
A voice with the sweetest little Cockney accent. Really enchanting. I never realized before how beautiful a Cockney accent could be.
You'll come, won't you?
I walked on.
As soon as you can.
I walked faster. Somehow I found my way to Putney.
John Street.
I found John Street.
29.
And I found 29.
Well, so you found your way here. Well, I am glad.
Yes, I found my way. I recall that I promised to pay you a speedy visit.
Well, it is nice of you to come so soon. Well, come in. With all, you must be going, so I read about it in the paper.
Oh, you know.
Yes, well, how could I help it? They say he was famous, though I never heard of him myself.
You didn't?
No, from the life he leads, he might just as well have been a traveling salesman. Not much fun.
No.
Well, here, I'll take your hat. How is it you could get away on the knee, didn't you?
No. The fact is, I've been given the sack.
Oh, well, I hope they paid you your month.
Oh, yes, I got my month's wages. Also an inheritance, £200 a year.
Oh, that is nice. Well, that's just about what I get from my brewery stock.
Oh?
Why, between the two of us, we could manage without... Well, I mustn't say that. I promised I wouldn't hurry things. Come and sit down, won't you?
Oh, gladly.
This is the parlor.
Oh, yes.
Well, I see. I know it's not much, but it's cozy.
Well, it has a feeling of...
What?
Of safety. That's what it is, safety.
Oh, dear, you are funny. Imagine walking into someone's parlor and saying it looks safe.
I feel as if the world is shut out.
You look frightened to death when I saw you standing at the door. Well, you don't look frightened anymore. Sit down, won't you? Have a cup of tea. I was just having mine.
Well, it's very pleasant.
Milk and sugar?
Milk. No sugar.
Well, if you like a good cup of tea, you'll get it here. Yeah, have one of them sandwiches.
Oh, thank you.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Yes, you don't act so much like a gentleman. Gentlemen?
Oh, how do they act?
Not very gentlemanly. Are you going to look for another position right away?
Well, I hadn't thought of
it. That's right. Why should you? You've been married before.
No, I haven't.
Well, I have. As I told you in my letter, I'm a widow. My husband died 4 years ago of appendicitis. Yes, it was caused by swallowing a bristle out of his toothbrush.
Oh, no.
Yes, oh, it was found at the operation. And he left me with his house and the brewery shares. He always said, beer won't fail.
Very shrewd prediction.
But it never has failed so far.
Well, good for beer.
Well, now, as to my taste, I like a quiet life.
Well, that's wonderful.
Is your tea all right?
Oh, it's perfect. It's marvelous. It's incredibly magnificent.
Well, aren't you nice? Well, it's a home life. That's what I like, looking after my home. Did you think I was awfully forward going to a matrimonial agency?
Why, no. Why should I?
Oh, I don't know. Some people say if you go to an agency, you let yourself in for it. But I say if you marry a man any other way, you don't know any more what you're getting. I never heard of a husband coming with a written guarantee or your money back.
No.
You?
I do suppose women take quite a chance when they marry.
Oh, well, what of it? Not if I was a young girl just starting out. When it comes to husbands, I've been there before. Well, what are you thinking?
Well, I was thinking that many problems seem suddenly very far away. All those years on the continents, we were pursued and haunted by reporters and curiosity seekers, and now suddenly, well, that's all over.
Yes, of course it is.
In this house, I feel as if I'd reached the end of a long, weary journey.
Oh, I am glad you feel that way.
Oh, it's so comfortable and quiet.
Yes, it is quiet here.
I can't even hear those newsboys shouting.
Well, I'll fix you another cup of tea. I know you'd like some.
Yeah.
Oh,
You're right. Prime Farr lies in repose. And soon he'll be forgotten in Westminster Abbey.
There's such a fuss about all that. What difference does it make where a man is buried so long as it's decently done? That's what I always say. What do you always say?
Well, I always say, what difference? Priam Farl is dead.
Yes.
Sleep softly, Priam Farl. And live Henry Leake.
That's right. That's the spirit.
Live Henry Leake.
Thank you.
You are listening to Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontan in The Great Adventure, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. While it's true that most of the 275,000 U.S. steel workers are men, there's one very important job entrusted to women only. That job is the inspection or assorting of the tin-plated steel sheets from which cans are made. Believe me, there's plenty of inspecting to do, for each year United States Steel Corporation produces enough of these sheets to make 12 billion cans for use in your kitchen and your home. It's hard to explain, but somehow women have a capacity for observation that makes them superior to men in this precise inspection service. This was first discovered by pioneers in the tin plate industry around 1900. In 1930, one big plant tried to substitute carefully chosen men. The result was a sharp drop in assorting and inspection output, so the job soon went back to the ladies. Now, this work is important to all of us. Each sheet examined and okayed leaves its plant and moves on to a can-making company from which it emerges as tin cans, most of them to be filled with food for our pantry shelves. An experienced girl minutely inspects and sorts about 10,000 sheets a day. But even though this is exacting work, there's always a waiting list of applicants. For the women who work at this job feel, and quite rightly, that they're doing one of the most important jobs in the steel industry. The United States Steel Corporation shares that feeling with every girl in its tin plate assorting departments. But the corporation trusts her with far more than her daily allotment of plate. It trusts her with the precious reputation of U.S. Steel. And whether the job be inspecting tin plate or a 10-ton length of steel rail, making carpet tacks or bridge girders, U.S. Steel today, as always, puts this same kind of trust in every one of its 275,000 workers. U.S. Steel workers respect and justify this trust. That's one of the most important reasons why, when you buy anything tagged with the famous round USS label, you can be mighty sure the steel is quality steel.
We pause now for station identification.
Your station is KECA, Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of The Great Adventure, starring Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontan, and featuring Romney Brandt as Oxford.
Only a week after we met, Henry and I were married. It was shortly after the great funeral in Westminster Abbey. We attended that funeral. We barely squeezed into a corner of the Abbey. And then, a few days later, in a small church in Putney, I became Mrs. Henry Leake. We were very happy. I like having someone to look after, and he was so grateful for every little thing I did for him. It was so funny and so helpless. Every once in a while, he'd say or do something that made me think he was, I wouldn't say balmy, of course. I wouldn't even think a word like that about my own husband, but special. That's it. I decided he was special. Every once in a while, he'd suddenly...
Alice, look. Look at that filthy smokestack. It's beautiful, isn't it?
What, that smokestack?
Isn't it marvelously hideous?
You're all right, Henry.
Oh, I want to paint.
Well, don't go painting that smokestack, not with the house needing a fresh coat.
Now, if I only had some decent brushes.
You know, Henry, let me look at you.
Oh, what beauty, what brutal loveliness.
Well, when he talked that way, I decided it was something he'd learned being with his gentleman so long, so I thought no more of it. And then, when he got some paints and took them up to the attic and began to daub away up there, I didn't think anything of that neither. After all, it's good for a man to have a hobby. And then, one day... He came downstairs with...
Alice.
Yes, dear?
Look, what do you think?
Oh, that's very pretty, dear.
Is that all you have to say?
Well, it's a lovely frame, isn't it? What's the picture?
That, my soul, is a painting worth at least £1,000, more even.
Oh, no, dear. You said that about one of your other paintings, the one showing Mr. Kelly's ballroom.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, where is that? It was hanging in the hall out there.
Well, it was until last week.
What do you mean?
Dear, well, I didn't like to tell you because the brewery had passed up its dividend last week and I was hard up for housekeeping money.
Good heavens,
and you
well.
You talk so much about the value of that picture. Well, I took it down to the corner shop and he put it in his window.
And?
Well, Mr. Kelly, who owns the ballroom down the street, he saw it and he wanted it on account of his ballroom being in it. Poor man, he always was a bit balmy, you know. He was in an asylum once.
How much did he pay for the picture?
£2.
What?
Well, I didn't like to tell you, dear, on account of it not being a thousand. Henry, I was proud of you. We lived on it all week.
And no one said anything unusual?
Oh, why should they? They just said they could tell right off it was Mr. Kelly's ballroom.
Alice, I've got to tell you something. Something very important. I am Priam Farrell.
Oh. Well, that's nice. Sit down. I'll get you a glass of water.
Alice.
All right, dear. It's all right.
Well, what do you mean, it's all right?
Oh, it makes no difference.
You don't believe me.
Well, what's the matter who you are? You're you, aren't you?
What do you mean?
I mean, you're you.
You're what?
Aren't you?
Why, yes, I suppose I am. Such an extraordinary way of looking at it.
Well, it's just common sense.
Well, I am I, and you are you.
Well, yes, of course.
Well, what wisdom you have, my soul.
Oh, I like it when you call me that.
Well, that's the way I think of you, my soul.
Oh, Henry, you must take it easy and not exert yourself too much.
Oh, am I exerting myself?
Yes, all this hard, deep thinking, you know, it isn't good for you.
Well, you may be right. I am I, and you are you, and nothing else matters.
That's right, Henry, except a good cup of tea. Come on. Well, for a while after that, Henry was sort of nervous, but it soon passed over. And several times after, we sold a picture to the corner shop for another £2. I was very proud. Henry was as happy as could be, sang as he worked. The months went by like a dream until one day when... Yes?
Is this Mr. Henry Leakes?
Yes.
Are you Mrs. Leakes?
That's right.
Could I speak to your husband?
Oh, he's up in the attic.
Painting?
That's right.
I'm an art dealer. I'd like to talk to him about selling us some pictures.
Oh. Oh, that's nice. Come in, won't you?
Thank you.
This way.
I've bought several of your husband's paintings from the shop at the corner. Why doesn't he ever sign his work?
Oh, he's shy. Henry!
Yes, dear?
I finally persuaded the shopkeeper to give me your husband's name and address. That's how I happened to find him.
Oh, well, I'm sure he'll be very glad to see you.
Does he do all his work up there in the attic?
Oh, yes. All of it is good for him, and it keeps him quiet while I get the housework done.
Oh.
Henry.
Yes?
Here's a man for you, Henry, about your painting.
Oh? Well, how do you do, Mr. Leake? I'm delighted to meet you. I was interested in seeing whether we could buy a few pictures from you.
Well, isn't that nice, Henry?
Well, I have only a few, but...
My word. That is magnificent.
What's that? You like that? It's only a picture of me.
I knew it at once, madam. A brilliant likeness. The spirit of it and the highlights on those sleeveless.
My cooking sleeves. I don't know what possessed him to do me cooking sleeves.
Well, that's you, my soul.
It's pure genius. May I make an offer for it?
No.
No. Why not, Henry? The gentleman wants to make an offer.
No, it's not for sale.
Now,
I came prepared to spend and to pay cash.
No, I'm sorry, no.
£500?
I'm sorry, it's not for sale.
What? Did you say £500?
£600, then.
No, I'm not in the least interested.
£600?
It's not a matter of money. You'll have to understand. It's just that I prefer not...
Henry, I haven't meant to tell you because I didn't want to worry you, but the brewery has passed up another dividend.
Oh, Lord.
So it's up to your painting. Beer has failed again.
I see.
Henry.
I see. All right.
Well, you can do another picture of me. I'd much rather be done without me cooking sleeves.
Will you take the money, madam? Here. Will you count it?
Oh, well, too dizzy to count. You always go about with £600 in your pocket.
In my business, madam.
Why are you so interested in my portrait. You've never seen me before.
Madam, your portrait happens to be one of the finest modern paintings I've ever laid eyes on.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you. Well, I better go and put this money under lock and key. Will you gentlemen excuse me?
May I take this along now?
Yes, I suppose so.
Mr. Leake, I'd like to ask your opinion of a picture I brought with me. I bought it some years ago. One of my customers is interested in it at the moment. I'd like to see what you think of it. It's in this case here. It's by Prime Parr. There.
Yes, that's a very clever work.
Very clever. Something he painted in Italy, I believe. The background and color suggest Italy.
Yes, possibly.
Yes, of course, the style is quite different from yours. But,
oh, yes, very different.
But still, he had a somewhat similar feeling for color.
You think so?
Oh, somewhat. At what period did you paint it?
What are you talking about? Signed?
By you, Prime Farr.
Now, look here. You said yourself that there was no similarity forever in the style.
I know. You seem to have tried very hard to change your style, Master, and in some ways you have. But still, there was once a well-known man who stood 7 feet tall. He shaved off his beard, dyed his hair, invented a very ingenious costume, and went to a fancy dress ball as Tom Thumb. Strange to say, his disguise was penetrated.
Who are you?
John Oxford.
My old dealer.
I'm delighted at last to meet you. After all these years of corresponding with you, never seeing you. It's a real pleasure.
Now, look here. I can't explain this whole strange story to you.
You mean Westminster Abbey?
Yes. It's too complicated. It's too ridiculous.
I'm sure it must be.
But I want you to understand that I, Priam Farrell, now Henry Leake, am happy for the first time in my life. Please understand that and keep my secret, will you, please?
It's too late.
Too late?
I'm afraid I must ask you to testify as Priam Farrell.
What on earth do you mean?
A few months ago, I bought some paintings from a small dealer at £10 each. They were undated and unsigned, but I examined the brushstrokes under a microscope, and I knew at once they were the work of Prime Farr. I sold them as far.
You what?
I guaranteed them as far as I staked my reputation on it. I did rather well with them, too. I sold them to an American millionaire for £4,000 each.
You swindler! You owe me a fortune.
And I'll be glad to pay you your share in return for your testimony.
I don't know what you're talking about, but if you think you can get me to appear in a courtroom, you're mistaken. All my life I've spent fleeing from reporters, prying foolish people, and now at last I found peace and quiet. If you think even £20,000 could get me into a courtroom, you're mistaken.
Then we'll need a subpoena.
You wouldn't dare.
Mr. Farrell, I'm being sued for £1,000,000.
What?
My reputation, my life's work are at stake. Do you wonder I'm glad I found you? You see, one of the paintings I sold, and I guaranteed as Prime Farrell's, has been found to have a date on the back, stamped on the canvas, a date 8 months after the death of Prime Farrell. The American millionaire is suing me for £1,000,000. I must insist you testify to your identity.
I won't do it.
I demand it.
I won't.
I demand it.
I won't do it.
I shall force you.
Can't you leave me alone?
I demand it. I shall use every legal means to force you to testify.
I will fight for it to the last ditch. Leave me alone.
Now, of course, I didn't know what had happened up there between Henry and that man. All I knew was that the man left looking very stern and angry and pale. And after that, Henry was, so unhappy and fidgety and gloomy. He didn't paint anymore after that for many weeks. What he did mostly day after day was pace up and down and look daggers until I was scared to speak to him. And now and then, he'd suddenly stop and say...
My soul.
Yes. Henry.
Whatever happens, you've got to believe in me. You'll stick to me.
Oh, but Henry, I'm sure nothing could happen that would make me do otherwise.
You've got to protect me. You've always done so. You're my haven.
Oh, of course, Henry, dear.
And that's the way it's got to be, always.
Of course, now, don't you strain yourself, dear. You keep calm. I'll lay down a minute on the sofa and let me stroke your head. And after a while, we'll have our cup of tea.
Yeah, all right.
That's
all right, yes.
Now. I'll soothe you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
You mustn't strain yourself, dear. You'll be getting ideas again, if you know what I mean. You just lay still.
Oh, you know, as you touch my head, all the troubles in the world disappear.
Well, that's what I'm for.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Oh, listen to that news, boy. It's not often they come way out here. It must be something special.
I'm afraid it is.
You don't suppose it's another love nest murder, do you?
No, I'm afraid I know only too well what it is.
Oh?
I saw the headline while I was out. Who is buried in Westminster Abbey? Art dealer claims Prime Farrell is alive.
What?
John Oxford, art dealer, claims Priam Farrell is living secretly in Putney.
Well, has he got that crazy idea like you had once?
Oh, not so crazy, I'm afraid.
Well, is he balmy?
No, no, he's not balmy,
but
my sweet.
It doesn't make sense.
No, I know it doesn't, my soul. Now, he hasn't yet identified me as the man he's talking about, but I'm afraid before long the story will be out, and then what'll we do? What'll we do when the reporters come and... Now, be careful.
Now, lay still. It's only the doorbell. Maybe one of the traits.
Oh, I don't know. Now, be careful.
Henry, now. You be still, dear.
All right, stand back, you. Stand back.
Here, you. What do you mean?
All right, Mother. Get in, quick.
I'm in, Sam.
What do you mean, forcing yourself in like this into a private house?
All right, close the door now.
Well, we got in anyway. I thought you might try to keep us out, so I couldn't take a chance. All right, Mother. Everything's all right.
I'm all of a tremble.
Say, what's going on here?
Push their way in.
Are you a reporter?
Of course I'm not. Why should I be a reporter? I'm a student. And this is my mother. Are you Mr. Henry Leake, sir?
Of course he is.
I do answer to that name.
Oh, dishonorable name. Mother, is this the man?
I think so.
Do you recognize him as your husband and my father?
What in heaven's name?
Henry.
Don't you know me, Henry? And to think it was just 23 years ago next Tuesday that you walked out of the house so casual-like, never to return.
Don't weep, Mother. He isn't worth it, even though he is me father.
Young man, you show very little emotion at first beholding the author of your existence.
Your flippancy is in bad taste, sir.
May I ask, are there any grandchildren? How many generations have I spawned on the spur of the moment?
There are no grandchildren.
Well, that's one thing to be thankful for.
Is that all you have to say, Emery?
Madam, I have never laid eyes on you before in my life.
What brazenness. Do you deny that you're Henry Leake?
Of course he doesn't.
Then, Mother, show him the document.
All right, I'll...
Well, now, just a minute. Don't you think we'd better all sit down? This isn't something we can discuss all standing in the doorway. Now, come here. Let's sit down, all nice and comfy. And after a while, we'll have a nice cup of tea.
All right. Very kind of you.
Now, you just sit here comfortably, Mrs. Leake.
Thank you, Mrs.
You can call me Mrs. Leake, too, if you like.
I'm afraid you have no right to.
Now, look here, you young puppy. I have a very strong inclination to thrash you.
You wouldn't dare.
Oh, wouldn't I?
Mother, the document.
Yes, here it is. Read for yourself.
Mr. Henry Leake and Sarah Featherstone, spinster... Registry office in Paddington? Why, how nice. This shows you were legally married, doesn't
it? Well, of course.
Which, I'm afraid, madam, you are not.
Why, what do you mean? I've got one of these two.
Embossed in gold.
Madam, I'm very sorry to have to put it bluntly, because I'm sure you were led innocently into a dreadful trap. But you must realize that no bigamous marriage can ever hold good.
You squirt.
In fact, bigamy is a crime.
Oh, fiddle-diddy.
Is that true, Henry?
Of course it is.
Well, there's a police station just over on Upper Richmond Road. If you step in there on your way back, if it gives you such pleasure to think of your father in jail.
Madam, do you mean you intend to do nothing about this yourself?
What on earth do you expect us to do?
Well, in the first place, I expect you to make up to Mother for your desertion.
Just 6 months before our son was born, Henry.
And to atone financially for all the years she struggled alone.
And what a struggle it's been, Henry. All by myself.
Oh, I am sorry. I truly am.
And I am, too. It must have been a terrible thing, but I'm afraid I really have nothing to do with this. This is really not my doing.
You blackguard!
Madam, do you really think you recognize me?
Oh, yes.
Aren't you Henry Leake?
Of course he is. People do change, but I recognize you. I heard a long time ago that you'd taken a position with that famous artist on the continent. Then I never heard of you again until just now.
When we read the advertisement in the paper.
Advertisement?
Well, what do you mean?
Didn't you know?
Of course not.
An American gentleman is advertising for anyone who knew Henry Leake. Former valet to Priam Farrell. It's something to do with a lawsuit.
So it's beginning.
I don't understand all this.
Mrs. Leake, would you like to come in the kitchen with me? I want to fix the tea, and I thought we might have a little talk together.
I'd like that.
And meanwhile, you gentlemen could get to know each other.
Gentlemen? Ha!
Ha! Yourself.
You'll have so much to talk about, I'm sure. Come on, Mrs. Leake.
All right,
this way.
Well, Father, if you've got an offer to make, you'd better make it a good one.
There now. Now, you sit down. I'll just hot up the water.
Tea'll taste good. I'm a bit shaky.
Yes, well, you see, I thought I'd better get you out of the way. Henry's got that look on his face, you know.
What look?
Well, don't tell me you didn't see it. Well, he's getting it all right. Didn't he used to beat you in the old days?
Oh, yes, sometimes.
What did he beat you with?
Oh, his fist, mostly. Sometimes the poker.
Oh. Well, he didn't use a flat iron in those days?
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, he's getting worse all the time. Oh, I tell you, I live in fear terror of my life. And always when he has that shy, innocent look on his face, like butter would melt in his mouth, and when he looks the shyest of all, that's when you've got to proceed with caution. Because that's when you know it's coming. I noticed it just now.
You did?
Yes. Didn't you see me move the fire tongs out of his way? Oh, dear. If you could only persuade him that he's rightfully yours and get him to go back to you, I'd be so thankful. But we've got to be careful how we do it, or we'll be in peril.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. I think perhaps we'd better go.
What do you mean you don't want your tea?
I don't think we have time.
Are you sure?
Well, all I've got to say to you, sir, is...
Son.
What is it, Mother?
We've got to go, quick.
But why?
Don't ask questions. Come.
What's the matter?
At once, hurry. This way, quick.
But what is all this?
Come on, son. Come on.
What on earth did you do to her?
I tried something out. I wanted to make sure.
Sure of what?
Sure that you're prime foul.
Oh, you know now. You believe me now.
I know you're not that woman's husband. Henry Leake was a wife beater. Besides, if there's one thing certain in this world, it is that you were never married before you married me, and that I will swear to.
However that may be, my sweet. The problem now is this. If I announce I'm prime foul, all our wonderful peace is gone.
No.
Gone.
Henry, maybe it's not that bad.
And if I insist I'm Henry Leake, then what about Mrs. Leake? What about bigamy?
Oh, dear.
What about you?
Oh, dear. What
Whichever way I turn, I'm lost.
You are listening to Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne in The Great Adventure, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here again, speaking for United States Steel, is George Hicks.
The primary business of the United States Steel family, of course, is making steel. But on my visits to the plants, I've noticed that they also make a good many other things. And those other things are examples not only of the ingenuity of members of the United States Steel family, but also of their constant desire to serve the community in additional ways and to make more jobs for more men. For instance, the blast furnaces and open hearth furnaces in the mills generate tremendous amounts of heat while making steel. That heat used to be wasted. But today, in many United States Steel plants, the heat is used. It is used to make steam, which generates electric power. And that power helps to supply thousands of homes in neighboring communities. The utility serving Pittsburgh, South Chicago, and Birmingham, for instance, gets substantial amounts of electric power from their neighboring United States Steel plants. And in Gary, Indiana, Carnegie, Illinois Steel Corporation produces enough surplus gas from its coke ovens to supply the community of 125,000 people with cooking and heating gas. In Birmingham, too, there's another example of an unexpected service. That is a soil conditioning material made of open hearth slag from the steel plants. For years, this slag had been a residue accumulation from steel making that was completely wasted. Then the scientists of the Tennessee Coal, Iron, and Railroad Company found that the slag from their open hearth furnaces, containing an unusually large amount of phosphorus and other elements, was good for certain types of soil. So today, TCI has a whole new department, making this soil conditioner and shipping it all over the South to improve crops. These activities are examples of how ingenuity has created new ways to serve the public. Another part in the story of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of The Great Adventure, starring Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, and featuring Romney Brent as Oxford.
Well, the day came when I was served with a subpoena by the lawyers of John Oxford. The trial began. The world of art was in an uproar. The news vendors shouted the latest bulletins. Reporters threw a sort of siege line around our house and camped there day and night. They disguised themselves as milkmen and butchers to force their way into the house, but Alice had them at bay. I said nothing. I spoke to no one, refused to make any statement. Here in this house, I had known the only real happiness I ever knew. Was I to throw it away for the squabbles of others? Finally, the trial began.
Order! Order in the court!
Are you sure you don't want to tell them all about it, dear, the whole story?
I never have another moment's peace in my life. No, no, it's none of their business, no.
Mr. Witt, you are an American.
I am.
You're in the habit of collecting paintings by renowned artists.
I am.
During the spring of last year, did you buy several canvases ascribed to Priam Powell?
I did.
What was the price?
About £4,000 each.
You bought these from...
John Oxford.
What did he tell you about them?
That they were genuine Powells of unknown date, painted probably a year or two before his death.
He guaranteed their authenticity?
He sure did.
Did you exhibit the pictures as genuine Powells?
I did.
What did you then discover?
A date stamped on the back of one canvas convinced me that it was a fraud.
Did you find the canvas maker who made the canvas?
I did.
And his assurances further convinced you?
Yes.
With what result?
I feel that I've been held up to ridicule before the whole art world.
To put it in your American vernacular, are you hopping mad about it?
I sure am.
That's all.
Are you sure you don't want to tell everything, dear?
I won't have anything to do with it.
Dr. Freeman, you signed the death certificate for Priam Powell?
I did.
Was there ever any doubt in your mind as to whom you were attending?
Of course not. Absolutely not.
Don't you really want to tell, dear?
I do not.
Mr. Duncan Powell, you are cousin to the late renowned Priam Powell?
I am.
You saw Priam Powell on his deathbed?
Yes.
You recognized him?
I did.
You knew Priam Powell from childhood, didn't you?
Yes.
In fact, hadn't you, as children, talked together?
Yes, we had.
Is there any way in which one might positively identify Priam Powell?
There is. I remember during one fight, his shirt was torn. And as we fought, I noticed two moles on his neck, very close together.
Ah, thank you.
Have you changed your mind, dear?
I have not.
Mrs. Leek, 23 years ago, what event occurred in your life?
I was married to Mr. Henry Leake.
What other event occurred?
He left me.
Did you learn where he had gone?
I learned he'd gone to the Continental Valley to the famous artist, Mr. Powell.
Can you identify Mr. Leake?
That's him. Fair.
What do you think, dear? Couldn't you change your mind?
No.
Mr. Leek, you've heard the other testimony presented here.
I have.
Will you give us your full name, please?
Priam Farrell.
What's that?
Priam Farrell, surely you've heard the name.
Yet you answered just now to the name of Henry Leek.
For almost 2 years, I've answered to that name.
Yet you now tell us you are Priam Farrell.
I do.
Do you mean to tell us that Priam Farrell does not lie buried in Westminster Abbey?
I do.
Do you expect us to believe you?
No.
Don't you think your story is a trifle bizarre?
I do.
Don't you realize it casts grave aspersions on our national Valhalla and brings international embarrassment to the Empire?
I do.
And yet, you say that you are Priam Powell?
Yes.
Did you paint the pictures purchased by my client?
I did.
Do you assert, then, that they are genuine Powells?
Yes.
Mr. Leek, or Mr. Farrell, or whatever other alias you wish to use at the moment, inasmuch as you calmly tell us you are Priam Farrell, the great painter, I am sure you will be happy to open your collar. and display the two moles referred to by Mr. Duncan Farr.
I will not.
Ah, you will not open your collar.
Certainly not.
I thought so. And why not?
I am a free-born Englishman. There is no law among the English statutes that compels a man to open his collar in public. I stand on my rights in Magna Carta. Ever since the year 1215, every precedent in English jurisprudence argues that a man's moles are his own affair. I defy you to prove otherwise. I will not open my collar. I will not show you my moles.
Well, the court took a recess. For 2 hours, the opposing lawyers argued with his honor about a man's property rights in his own neck and collar band. The judge decided the privacy of an Englishman's collar is sacred and not to be violated. His moles are private domain.
Order the court, order the court.
The court reconvened.
Dear.
Yes?
Oh, are you awfully unhappy?
Awfully. I hate all this. I hate these people. They've destroyed our peace.
Well, what have you decided to do?
Well, I had to admit that I'm Priam Farrell. I had no choice. But I'll be hanged if I help him prove it.
I loathe Priam Farrell.
I want to be Henry Leake. The only real happiness I've ever known has been with Henry Leake. The very name, Priam Farrell, is a nightmare to me.
Next witness, the so-called Mrs. Priam Farrell.
Beast.
Mrs. Priam Farrell, to the stand, please.
It's all right, dear. I don't mind. Well, ta-ta for now.
Order! Spend the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, sir, if you got.
I do.
Alice sat quietly in the witness box. I watched her. How could she be so calm, so serene? I couldn't understand.
Mrs. Farr, the so-called Mrs. Farr.
It's rather confusing, isn't it, sir?
Madam, how did you meet your husband?
Through a matrimonial agency.
Do you think that's quite the nicest way to launch on holy wedlock?
Well, if you're trying to tell me that I'm not nice, I don't think you're a gentleman.
Every moment I kept my eyes glued on Alice. Why wasn't she resentful?
Madam, I won't call you by name. In that way, I can spare you embarrassment.
I'm not embarrassed.
Haven't you been living under the name Mrs. Henry Leake?
That's the name we were married under.
Did you then marry a man living under a false name?
Well, what's in a name? I married the right man, didn't I?
Order! Order!
Then I began to realize a strange thing.
Madam, when did you first begin to think of yourself as Mrs. Priam Farr?
Last week.
Not before then?
Oh, no.
I see.
I began to realize that to Alice, it didn't matter. It didn't matter who or what I was.
Are you enjoying your new role as Mrs. Priam Farr?
Well, that's not a new role. That's who I am.
Don't you find it more exciting than being Mrs. Henry Leake?
Well, why should I? I'm married to the same man.
Does your husband have two moles on his neck?
Of course he has.
Why does he refuse to reveal them?
Perhaps he's not as proud of his moles as he was when he was a little boy.
Isn't it true that you and your so-called husband are playing an assumed role to avoid criminal proceedings?
Why should we? We've done nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong! Madam, are you aware that you've been living with a man who is a bigamist?
Don't you mean to say you believe all that?
With a man who deserted his wife, his child, his obligation, and calmly married you in addition, in a ceremony which can only be called a fraud from beginning to end.
A fraud? I've got me lines.
Are you not aware that the paper you refer to is worth nothing in view of his previous matter?
No, no, stop. Stop. I'll open my collar. The artist is always beaten. There you are, you moles.
More tea, dear.
Oh, I'd love it. Oh, it's very soothing tea.
Yes, nothing like a nice cup of tea. Well, I'm glad you feel better.
Reminds me of our first tea here in the house together.
Yes.
That wonderful day.
Oh, well, of course, this is a little different.
By George, that crowd of people still milling around outside.
I've disconnected the doorbell, so they won't bother us too much.
Our life isn't going to be quite the same, is it, my soul?
I know. What made you change your mind and suddenly prove who you were?
Well, I suddenly realized that the peace we found was not just in this house and in our names, but inside us. And I realized that to you it made no difference who I was.
Well, why should it? You're you.
Yes, of course, but that's such a simple piece of wisdom that it's hard for me to hammer it into my head. It won't make any real difference, though, will it?
No. All we'll have to do is to change the crest on my writing paper.
And even if we have to build a wall against the world, everything else will be the same now, won't it?
Of course it will.
Even though I'm disgustingly famous.
Well, why not?
And you won't mind. No, you won't mind if I'm really awfully rich.
Oh, don't you worry about it, dear.
And you'll even put up with it if I, well, to put it bluntly, if I should turn out to be a millionaire?
We'll work it out, dear.
Oh, my darling. Oh, how wonderful you are. Oh, how I do love you.
Yeah, another cup of tea.
Well, I don't mind if I do.
Has fallen on a Theater Guild of the Air production of The Great Adventure by Arnold Bennett, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation, starring Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne, and featuring Romney Brent. Other members of the cast included Roland Winters as Leek, Alfred Shirley as the Doctor, Dwight Wiest as Duncan, Marjorie Mott as Mrs. Leek, Elliot Reed as Henry Leek, Robert Chisholm as the Lawyer, Barbara Weeks as Sophia, and Donald MacDonald as Witch. And now, here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, be with us when the Theater Guild on the Air presents that hilarious comedy, The Male Animal, by Elliot Nugent and James Thurber. Starred will be Elliot Nugent himself and Paul Douglas, star of the current Broadway hit Born Yesterday and well-known sports commentator. Be sure to listen next week when the Theater Guild on the Air brings you The Male Animal.
Remember, next week, The Male Animal by James Thurber and Elliot Nugent. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. For the first time tonight, our many listeners in the state of New Mexico are hearing the Theater Guild on the air directly from stations located in their own state. The United States Steel Corporation takes great pleasure in welcoming radio station KTRC in Santa Fe, the capital city of New Mexico, which opened its new studios today with a reception honoring the Theater Guild on the Air, and which joined the network with the broadcast of our play tonight. We also welcome stations KOAT in Albuquerque and KGAK in Gallup and KFUN in Las Vegas, which likewise have recently joined the American Broadcasting Company. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Homer Fickett, director, Carol Irwin, production executive, and Armina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. The play was adapted for radio by Eric Barnow. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at this same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.